Okay, so in the question two, which is this question about just what is a thing, right? And what makes a thing real?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Well, you know you're doing philosophy when somebody asks and tries to answer the question, what makes a thing real?
What makes a thing real?
And what is the thinginess of things?
What's a thing?
Yeah, what's a thing? All right. Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe one way to do it is the first thing to think about with things is that things aren't really us.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, yeah. Right? Yet, I have a field within which my body is situated and has its projects and activities, and things are a part of that in one way. But yet at the same time, they're not me. And somehow I know that that's so. And so I thought maybe we could start with this section on the unity of the thing, the existential unity of the thing. And I've got a quote there that might be a little bit helpful. So on page 333 says, "The unity of the thing, beyond all of its congealed properties, is not a substratum, right? Something needs an empty X, or a subject of inherence, but rather that unique accent that is found in each one, that unique manner of existing of which its properties are a secondary expression." Right? For example, he says, "The fragility, rigidity, transparency, and crystalline sound of a glass expresses a single manner of being," like this one. "If a patient sees the devil, he also sees his odor, his flames, and his smoke, because the meaningful unity devil is just this acrid, sulfurous, and burning essence. In the thing, there is a symbolism that links each sensible quality to the others." And so on, right? And so forth. So there is a way in which the thing is all of those. It's more than its simple qualities, right? And this takes us back to that discussion we had in the previous podcast about the bouquet of flowers,
mm-hmm.
because it's both a thing, right? Is both the presence and the absence. It's different horizons, but things also serve as kind of guiding mechanisms in a certain way. And this also relates back to the way in which the thing is my body, and yet it's a thing that somehow is rejected by and not my body. Another way to put it here, I like this section, he says, on that same page, 333, further on down. He says, similarly, in the interaction with things, this after he talks about a certain manner of being in the world, each one is characterized by sort of a priori that it observes in all of its encounters with the outside. The thing's sense inhabits it as the soul inhabits the body. I think that's a nice analogy for how we'd conventionally think about the soul's relation to the body.
Mm-hmm.
It is not behind appearances. And so here he talks about his ashtray because he's French and he's probably smoking. the ashtray.
I mean, he's smoking a cigarette. He's smoking half a cigarette. Pictures that I've seen of
him. Yeah, he's smoking a cigarette while writing this. Yeah. He's trying to get one in one hand and writing it with the other.
Yeah.
But pounding and pecking it out. So the sense of the ashtray, or at least its total and individual sense, such as is presented in perception, is not a certain ideal of the ashtray that coordinates the sensory appearances, and that would only be accessible to the understanding, that is the intellectualist view, right, the Kantian view. Rather, it animates the ashtray and is quite evidently embodied in it. This is the thing, this is how the thing draws, right, our attention, essentially, to it. It asks these things of it, you know, those that sort of thing. So this is why we say that in perception the thing is given to us in person or in flesh and blood. Prior to other persons, the thing accomplishes this miracle of expression, an interior that is revealed on the outside, a signification that descends into the world and begins to exist there, and that can only be fully understood by attempting to see it there in its place. I'll just continue because this is really good because it puts the body back in. Thus, the thing is the correlate of my body and more generally of my existence, of which my body is merely the stabilized structure. The thing is constituted in the hold my body has on it. In the hold my body has upon it. It is not at first a signification for the understanding, but rather a structure available for inspection by the body. That's the way in which it draws us, right, in its thinghood. All right, so there, it's a, things are in a milieu, right, that draw our bodies toward them in one way or another. Yet, at the same time, we know they aren't our bodies. Because there's a non-human quality to them that is other than my body. And yet, as we mentioned last time, so the thing is a thing, but it's also, it's the presence and the absence. It's the thing that was like allows me to situate my body, right, in the world. But at the same time, I know that it is not me. It is something other than me.
Yeah. We could maybe say, we could maybe say that the thing is a locus of a certain style that is not my own, but that I can explore.
That's good. Yeah.
And that has meaningful correlates.
Yeah.
Or analogies to my own style.
Yeah.
So it's only because I have a style
that I can interact
that with I can it. Interact with it as a stylized, as a physiognomy.
Yeah.
That is to say, as a certain kind of behavior.
Yeah, that's good.
Its being is this behavior. So like in the case of an animal, that's easy because they move around.
Yeah.
But in the case of like a glass, we have to think about its style, its behavior, as it's as the way in which its breakability and its sound and its transparency are all different ways of expressing a certain style. Those are all just
remember it's also the glass is the as that absence that we described with the bouquet of flowers. So the glass is not only its properties. Right. Formally, we would call it
right.
Its properties, its hardness, its you know what I mean. But it's also those other things.
Yeah, it is the those absences.
That's the style,
right?
Right, in those absences, you know, that gives us this affect,
right? And so it
allows
would be,
us to encounter it.
If you were to say that's a gentle person,
yeah,
right. And you were saying that person's style is gentle,
mm-hmm.
right? You it would express itself in like they touch you softly, you know. They speak gently or kindly or with nice words or not too loud or you know you could look at all these different manners of expression, but you wouldn't say, oh, that's a person that touches softly, right? Yeah. That's just
that'd be weird.
One way of talking about their gentleness. That's just one way their gentleness is expressed.
Yeah.
And so in the same way, all of these things are like a certain style of existing that we'll never know completely, just like you'll never know a person's character completely.
Right.
But that you can interrogate and explore and get into a dialogue with, which is why picking up a thing and turning it around in your hand and exploring it from different angles and thinking about its weight and what it does and how it sounds is such a powerful, a simple but powerful activity for human beings. Because this is how we get to know the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It is unfinished openness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what things are.
Yeah. Right.
And so I think a couple of quotes that might be really helpful. I think the one, of course, is the one that Andy mentioned in the previous podcast, which is the correlate of my knowing body and the thing that denies this body.
Mm-hmm.
But then previous on page 338 toward the bottom of that long paragraph, so the real lends itself to an infinite exploration. It is inexhaustible. This is why human objects and utensils appear as if placed into the world, whereas, because they're like extensions of my body, right? Whereas things are rooted in a background of non-human nature. For our existence, the thing is much less a pole of attraction than a pole of repulsion.
Mm-hmm.
We do not see ourselves in it. And this is precisely what makes it a thing. We do not begin by knowing the perspectival appearances of the thing. It is not mediated by our senses, our sensations, or our perspectives.
There's a cat that maybe has a hairball.
Yeah. There you go, bud. Oh, there it is. Come on out. You were doing some serious cleaning. Now I'll never forget about this passage without the hairball.
Yeah, that's right.
Now it was, you know.
Yeah, this is the hairball passage.
The hairball passage, yeah.
It's funny that it's the pole of repulsion.
The pole of repulsion. It's rejecting this. So we do not begin by knowing the perspectival appearances of the thing. It is not mediated by our senses, our sensations, or our perspectives. We go straight to the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And only secondarily do we notice the limits of our knowledge and of ourselves as knowing. I like that. We go straight to the thing. The thing, when he says about the way that the thing is part of our projects, or earlier in the chapter when he talks about the gaze, right? We're directed toward things. We go straight to the thing. Yeah. And yet it's a pole of not attraction, but repulsion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not us, nor is it our bodies. It denies our bodies.
Yeah. And in doing that, it solicits exploration.
Mm-hmm.
If the thing just was, as it were, cut from the same cloth as us and was just a correlate to our bodies.
Yeah.
And or probably even better, if the thing was just an intelligible structure that was a correlate to our minds.
Yeah.
Then you would learn the thing through a little bit of study, probably of its general laws and rules, and then you would never bother interacting with it ever again.
Yeah.
Because you would know it, and there would be no need of living for very long after you had, you know, finished your studies.
Yeah.
Where you'd learned the rules of things.
Yeah.
And then you'd basically just, like, gotten a full intellectual grasp of the world.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you don't ever get that, which is why every day you wake up and there's this, I mean, regardless of whether you have a job or you have people to love or anything else, we've all got this very basic project every morning to wake up to,
mm-hmm.
which is explore things.
Yeah.
Because they're never done.
Yeah.
The world is never over. It's never,
yeah.
It's always, there's always another opening. There's always another horizon beyond the horizon. There's always another thing to explore. And so there's just always another side of things
yeah.
to get to know.
Which are always already there and laden with a history before we even get yep. to them.
Yep.
Right? That's yep. what makes them things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're in history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a pretty good account of things.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to stop.
Yep.
So that'll be things, and then we'll move on to
the world.
The world. All right.